Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Greetings, travelers. Oh my gosh. That was funny. We are a professional podcast. I swear.
We are a very professional podcast that is designated who should do what. And yes. as per usual, nobody knows. So
we were all pushing buttons. It's like the sinking of the Poseidon Adventure. We're all just hitting buttons on the dashboard hoping something comes up. So
yeah, except for our actual producer was doing the right stuff. Yay, Bo. And we're like, let's break things.
Let's push buttons. Let's stop her.
Let's see how many things we can break. For those of you watching the video, I'm super excited. We have a whole new collection of artwork, which is the Eerie Travel Dragons. This one is Nessie. You can kind of see. So we have seven dragons that represent the different cryptids. I think this one, which is the Chupacabra, might be my favorite. So come see us at a show, and we'd love to give them to you. Those were supplied by Spadefish Art, who did the art.
I believe they're going
to
be on the store as well on the website. So
they're on the website along with stickers. So you can get them as a 5x7, or you can get them as a sticker. We have a whole new sticker collection, too. So
yeah, we've got some of the stickers coming soon from the Dark Side of the Smokies.
I know we keep saying that, and people are probably like, stop saying it if you're not going to put it out. But
it is in the last steps. It's amazing to me how good it looks. I can't wait for people to see it. So
it's gorgeous, gorgeous. Whole new level with the books, but it definitely takes a lot to make a book, and people don't realize, because this book is very fancy on the inside.
Years of research, lots of typing. It's good, and hopefully the next two won't take as long. So
well, now that we know what it takes, I think we're going to be better at it. So.
Yeah, and we've been working all three at the same time, so it's been pretty fun. So, but anyway, one of the things that I often bring up on this show is my love for role-playing games, as I am wearing a role-playing game shirt. But one of my favorite games that I think fits our theme so well, because it's myths, people investigating myths, monsters, legends, ghosts, aliens, Bigfoot.
And Mark, I think you should let the audience guess for like 2 seconds right before you announce what this is, because every traveler out there who listens to us will insert the name that you're about to say.
Yeah, we're now over 200 episodes. So yeah, I think I've mentioned it in about 147 of them. But yes, that is Bureau 13 by the late, great Richard Tijolka. But he can't be with us tonight. We tried the Ouija board. We tried a few other things, and he said no. He stopped doing this stuff. He's moved on. He's on a higher plane. You know, good for him. But we have the next best thing. We have the amazing Bruce Sheffer joining us tonight. And for those of you who don't know who he is, let's bring him on. And Bruce, hi.
Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Erica. Hi, Mark. Glad to be here.
You and I go way back to the old Bureau 13 mailing list. And
I
used to be.
Bureau 13 has been on many, many different platforms. Yeah. It started off on AOL. It went over to the mailing things on Yahoo. It's had like at least two or three different Tri-Tac games supported mailing chat groups. And of course, there's ones on Facebook that you can go to.
We'll have to list some of those for those travelers that are wondering what Mark is talking about, and those that want to go down the rabbit hole with him again, as we like to call it, the Muncie rabbit holes when he does this. But Bruce, I got to ask you first, because Mark is going to fanboy and monopolize this entire conversation if I let him. What got you into Bureau 13?
Well, what got me into Bureau 13 was Richard Tijolka. I met Richard Tijolka at a very small convention in upstate Ohio, where I had traveled to that convention just on a whim. And when I was there, I played a game of monsters made out of clay fighting each other called Monster Squash. And of course, when you're the best part of it was when you killed the other person's monster, you got to take this big mallet and just squash them into a and so much joy was there. And so I met him, and I came back to, at the time, Huntington, West Virginia. And there we were about to produce like our first or second local convention. The Marshall University had a science fiction group called MUSEF, which of course means Marshall University Science Fiction Society. Anyways, but they would take over all the academic buildings and run a free convention. So for everybody in the city and whoever could get there. And it was called MunchCon because it was Marshall University, City of Huntington Con. So,
wow.
But most people didn't know that it was an acronym. They just figured it. We just called it Munch, for other reasons. But anyway, so I was, involved in the gaming there. And I said, well, these games I played up there at this convention were great. Let me go and contact TriTac Games and see whether or not we can get some copies of this. Now, again, free convention, no money. Okay. So when I called him up, got him on the phone, and I said, hey, Mr. Tohoka, yeah. I really love playing your games. Could you send me some copies of this and we'll sell them here at the convention and run demos of them. And that way you can get something out of sending it to us. And he's like, well, that's all very nice, Bruce, but wouldn't it be better if I came down and ran them myself?
Wow.
Mr. Tohoka, thank you very much. And so I says, and you can stay with me because that way you don't have to deal with any kind of, housing and stuff like that. And he was like, oh, that's great. Thanks. So I hosted him for the entire length of the convention. And that was basically the start of a beautiful friendship. While he was there, he showed me these, basically what they called galleys, which is what you used to send off to the printer to take a big picture of, and then they would reduce that in size, and they would actually put it into the game. And he showed me this stuff from this game called Fringeworthy. It was very, very, quiet and suspicious about it. He says, what is this? He says, it's amazing, Bruce. He says, but what's about? He says, just you wait. He's always been like that. And, because his tagline was, wait till you see what we do next. We had good fun together. He went off. The next convention I went to at Gen Con, he had Fringeworthy. It was the very first role-playing game they had produced. And, of course, I bought it. It was amazing. It's a game of interdimensional exploration, my favorite game of all time. And then a year or so later, he came out with the very first issue, version of Bureau 13 called Stalking the Night Fantastic in those days. And that's how it started. And from the beginning, I was, pretty much a total fanboy of Richard Tohoka and TriTac Games because, this guy was like, he was living the life that we all wanted to. He was my own company. He was making his living off of it. We were all like, how does this happen? And he was so down to earth. It just seemed like any of us could be not just a gamer, but could be a game producer and a publisher and do whatever we wanted to do. We just had the balls to get out there and do it. So,
And he was doing this, basically out of his garage. It was, there were three
ring binders. He was doing it out of his home. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Three ring binders with, hole punch stuff. And then later they got a little fancier with the bindings and stuff like that.
Right. Originally, it was saddle stitched. Bureau 13 was Stalking the Night was saddle stitched together, and then they came out with it. You saw the three ring binder. Actually, the second one was the wire spiral. Oh,
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and then that was the third. Okay, and then in 1992, they made the big jump to perfect binding. With the
Foglio,
Phil Folio cover. Yeah, and that was basically the gold standard of Bureau 13 for quite a while.
Yeah, I've played that edition for decades, and it's the game itself is basically. I liked how actually Pallotta, I think, put it best. It was basically X-Files with heavy artillery. was a great way of putting it.
I called it basically, I called it secret agents versus vampires at one point, and other things like that, or, you know, and as I was running demos of the game at various conventions, I always had very crazy type things like that, you know, put a flamethrower to Jason, you know, do this, do that. And during that, I also produced three supplements for Tri-Tac Games, but, you know, perfect bound 100-page supplements. And I can tell you that after I did the first one, okay, which was Stalking the Steel City, there were a lot of flaws in that. And that publication, you know, I the borders were way too big, and there were some issues, but I didn't care because I was like, I got this thing done. I got it out there. It was in people, there was in game shops all over the country. And I was like, I felt like a real live game producer, you know, and the company I did it under was called Outpost Games.
They came out and I was sitting there going, wait a minute, there's new Bureau 13 stuff. I thought I had everything. And suddenly there was new. It was incredible. And I think that was about the time the message boards started really popping on AOL. So that'll give you a little bit of a time frame here.
Okay. So since we've dated ourselves saying that, I just want to clarify a couple things here for our listening audience, because some of our travelers are going, message boards? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that whole concept, you know, when the internet was a brand new baby that humans started to use, it was very different than the internet we have today. But one of the things I think is very interesting about Bureau 13 is it predates like shows like Supernatural and even the X-Files. Like, it predates a lot of that stuff. And this is back when talking about the monsters, the aliens, the, you know, all the ghosts, all that stuff that is part of that world was not as talked about as it is now. It's more like commonplace now in a way to talk about some of these creatures, and there's TV shows and, you know, magic and all kinds of stuff. But back then, this was, you know, like a behind the scenes. It was Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. It was the Universal Monsters. It was not mainstream like it is nowadays.
We saw a Satanic Panic going at this time. We were getting the chick tracks were still, you know, making the rounds where, you know, if you play Dungeons and Dragons, you will die. That was one of the beautiful things about Bureau 13 is I grew up in Charleston, West Virginia, not too far from Huntington. And my D&D club got banned because it was satanic. And so we then rebranded as the Bureau 13 club, and nobody said anything about it because it was
right.
Probably had more Satanism and demons in it than D&D, but we got away. Then we had to change it to Marvel Superheroes at one point, I think. But other than that, we did Bureau for a long while. So
yeah, fighting demons was actually common in Bureau 13.
Yeah,
you know, there were a lot of rules in the game about how to effectively, you know, fight them, and they even had special bullets, which we dubbed the Cotton Rounds, Creature of the Night Specials. They were hydraulically compressed wood bullets that were with a coating of silver around it, you know, with a core of cold iron, and they were packed in holy water. So you took these things out, put in your gun, and they were effective against like five different types of supernatural monsters.
Yep. Predated Hellboy's bullets, predated everybody's. And those,
yeah.
And even Mignola from Hellboy admitted that he played Bureau 13 a couple of times because it was just so fascinating to him. And, you know, and it fit his belief system. We'll have to get into him another day too. Maybe try to get him on. But anyway,
Bureau 13 has a history. It starts, you know, right after the Civil War.
Right.
You know, because the North almost lost the Civil War due to the interference of the supernatural on the side of the South. So, you know, and Nick Pallotta actually wrote a novel, his version of it, which was called Damned Nation. And over the years, and we're talking decades here, we have filled in a lot of the history of that. I mean, one of the later things that Richard did was called the Black Powder Years, talking about how the Bureau was in the beginning, where they literally didn't know anything about the supernatural, except that they knew some legends and things like that. And up moving forward, you know, and now, of course, it's very, very high tech, very, very with a lot of resources and friends that can help you understand what you need to do whenever you're up against a certain type of supernatural. And you may not know, you, the player, may not know. You can go to one of those people we call subject matter experts, and they will give you the truth so you can go and be an effective agent.
Okay. So I have a question, because you wrote three modules for this. Mm-hmm. How does that change your playing? Do you feel like you can be a player? Were you still a player in Bureau 13, or did you have to run the game?
My personal opinion is that all game designers should play their games, because, you know, it's great if you have a great, group or whatever like that, but game designers have a tendency to think that they know better until they actually play with the system that they're putting it. Basically, there's a phrase, like, you need to eat your own dog food. Okay. If for no other reason than know that it is dog food. Okay. So, and that was a thing that Richard, I don't think, did enough. So I insisted always that, if I'm going to go and I'm going to play test my adventures, if I'm going to talk about a game, it's going to be a game I played, GM'd, and played, whatever it is, and so that's something that I've carried through the entirety. So I was always running a campaign in one of the Tri-Tech system games, either Fringeworthy or Bureau 13 or FTL 2448, then later on Hardwired Hinterland and Weird Zone and some of the other smaller games.
The plus side with this is that they were all fairly compatible. You could have your Bureau agents go on a Fringeworthy mission, which predated Stargate. I will always say that, because it was basically military finds this strange circular object that teleports people to different dimensions. Wait a minute.
That's Stargate. It was actually a climatology scientist on an expedition, to the Antarctic, who finds the portal. So it was it was not a military operation.
Right. But then it got turned into Stargate. And we were, and I know that was a sore spot with Richard for a long time, was he was like, hey, they ripped off my freaking game. And they
didn't give me credit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was just a poor guy in a house. So, couldn't fight the Universal / Paramount producers. So.
Richard deserves a lot of credit, because Richard was a good son. His mom had reoccurring bouts of leukemia, and he basically stayed with her and helped her through those, and basically gave up a lot of things in his life to do that. And, so this is one of the reasons he wasn't the big success he deserved to be, was because he wasn't able to get out and promote like he should have, because he was busy taking care of mom. But it also allowed him the freedom to, once you get to a certain level of income, you basically don't worry about things like whether you have a current job or not. You can run off to a convention. So he was able to do that sort of thing. And as he told me, they can't, if you're not making your money off the business, the business can't go out of business. That was true with me with the modules I did. I was not making my money as a game designer, which was useful, because I lost a lot of money doing those modules. So, I got very sad when I started pouring them into the landfill.
Yeah.
So what is it like when you create these worlds and you go to a convention and have fans come up to you because the one thing about, I think it's true with any media, whether it's books, whatever, but role-playing games, people get very invested in it. They get very excited. It takes on, and especially role-playing games that can take hours and hours and hours and hundreds of hours of play, depending on the kind of group you're in. How was that first fan interaction? Because you were the fan before. What was it like having your interaction?
Well, it was pretty amazing, because of course they want to tell me everybody, Richard didn't publish a campaign. Okay. In any of his games, really. So it was always, here's a baseline, here's a paragraph, you know, and you work off of that. You know, I mean, he did produce some supplements, Hans, Hell's Night, you know, that actually had some adventures in it. But most of the time, you were expected to come up, you know, your GM was to come up with their own adventures. So people coming up to me were telling me about these entire campaigns that were completely different from how I had run things. You know, and so it was great to hear, because that was the kind of cross-pollination that made, you know, they could listen to my ideas, I'd listen to their ideas, you know, we'd tell crazy war stories, had, you know, it was wonderful, you know, and, you know, I wasn't trying to promote any kind of one true wayism, and, you know, neither in written, TriTech never did that. So a lot of people, you know, felt, you know, as I said, they felt that kind of intimacy from Richard that you can't get from so many other game designers, and especially the big companies, you know, where it's literally Mr. You know, Mr. Tuhulka. He was Richard, every Brit, you know, Rich. Everybody.
Yeah, that's when I had to call one time to order a thing, the number is Rich's house.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he would answer the phone, and he would talk to you for like 30 minutes, just about what, oh, how's your campaign going? What are you doing? And all this. Yeah. I felt you felt like he was your, you know, your uncle you hadn't talked to in a little while. And he would just listen to your stories, and he'd laugh, and he'd tell you, oh, that's great, let's do more of that. You know, and can't wait to hear what you're doing next and all that. We had done a Star Trek crossover. I had Bureau 13 in Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And it was for a fan club that we were doing by mail, a play by mail fan club. And he's like, you have full permission, do it, you know, go for it. But I need to read every one of those. So I sent him every month, I'd send him whatever we had done. And he would he would call me and say, oh man, that was great, I can't wait to do this. And I was so sad we never got up to see him again. I only got to see him at that one Gen Con, and I got to play Bureau with him, which was fantastic. And that was the one Pallotta sat at. And so I played with Pallotta and Tuhulka, which made me very happy.
So, as you see, Mark slid in nerddom, as he does.
Sorry.
Question for you, Bruce. What is your favorite monster from Bureau 13?
Oh, that's tough, because I make so many of the adventures, and I don't want to include any of the ones I created, because...
what is the favorite one you created? Let's do that.
Created a biological vampire called Joshua Knight, spelled K-N-E-C-H-T. Okay, and he was essentially a guy that was that got infected with a virus that actually gave him every appearance of being a vampire, including all their vampiric powers, except for the fact he wasn't undead. All right. So people would come up and they try throwing holy water on him. He'd look at him going, really? You know, and that was before people all started saying, oh, no, none of that stuff works. That's all, you know, that's all fables and stuff like that. I mean, in the game we were running, it worked on, you know, traditional vampires. So, you know, so here's a guy that's lived 400 years. You know, this is before Highlander. You know, he has all kinds of people he knows, and one of the very first adventure in Stalking the Still City is called The Pittsburgh Ripper, which is about a guy who's, you know, a drug addict who's a little too smart, and he manages to break into Joshua Knight's secret laboratory and take one of the samples of the virus that he's been working trying to get rid of the negative aspects of it, you know, and so it's worse, and he injects himself with it and becomes this monstrous, you know, vampiric like creature that is just ripping people's heads off right or left in downtown Pittsburgh. So that was my you know, kind of favorite character. And he's been a reoccurring character in all my campaigns, because he's not a one shot, you know, he's not even really a villain. He's an anti-hero, because he's lived long enough that he doesn't, you know, his only loyalty is to the people that work for him and the people that he's had relationships with over the years. He doesn't care about government. He doesn't care about religion. He doesn't care about all those things. He cares about, you know, who you are, you know, and all that, you know, well, this is for the good of the American people. He's like, yeah, right. Okay. You know. Let me tell you some stories about, you know, Alexander Hamilton.
Nice. Oh my gosh. Okay, so then what is your favorite monster or bad creature or just creature in the game that you didn't make, but maybe was your favorite when you went into the creation of stuff later?
I would say ghosts, because ghosts are really cool creatures in that there's many different types of them. And Richard went into it in Haunts, okay, saying all the different types. Some of them are just psychic echoes, okay, that have reoccurring kind of things that happen. Or, you know, sometimes it's just magical energy that is just resident in a building or something, and so you have caught in cold spots. But sometimes they actually, and sometimes they're demons that are posing as dead people so that they can do nefarious things. But sometimes they're actually spirits that are trapped, either because they're things, curses that have been placed upon them, or, you know, the classic undone business or whatever. And, you know, so you have this wide variety, and you can make them very complicated, and you can bring in all kinds of people that maybe know about them and are using them for their own, you know, purposes. And so the ghosts can be bad, and sometimes the ghosts are not bad, but they, because they're ghosts, they're causing problems. And that's one of the beautiful things about Bureau 13 is that you have supernatural that's good. You have supernatural that is not bad, but they cause problems because of things that have happened. Either their environment has changed and now they're exposed, or something has changed to make them a problem. And then you have, of course, evil supernatural, which is usually better at hiding themselves anyways. And so you have this gamut that you can go through as a designer, and you have a wide palette. So, and ghosts are like that too. So my son played a ghost for a while, and he had a great time with the ghostly abilities, especially the fact when he would do things like materialize in front of people, and the bad guys was like, starts firing at him. And of course the bullet's just going right through, but while they're distracted, the team got to do their thing to basically get the drop on him. So, and he got to use his ghostly powers, you know, for good. He had a lot of fun with that.
Oh my gosh, that sounds terrifying and yet awesome at the same time. Homework,
and that was, you know, that's the way we kind of classify ghosts even to this day. So, but we need to take a quick break and talk to our ghosts of sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Destiny Beard, the lyrical soprano who will haunt your dreams. With her alluring melodies and intricate harmonies, this dark siren of wistful song shall capture your soul and lead you into the night. Check out Destiny's new single, The Haunting Is Over, with international musicians Sam Haynes and Gary Bennett, as well as her other musical works at destinybeard.com.
Plan on flying? It's time to upgrade to a real ID. Because in order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID, or you'll need another acceptable form of identification. So don't wait. Find out how to get your real ID at tsa.gov/realid. That's tsa.gov/realid. Or visit your local DMV. And then you'll be cleared for takeoff.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
And we're back.
For the video portion of this, we should totally do the police squad, where one of us is like pouring a drink while we're frozen and just keeps filling and stuff.
Yeah, no, it's true. I think we're just looking, we got to totally man it up in the future. But okay, so we're back. Mark, what is your favorite monster?
Oh, I actually think it's one of Bruce's, it's not really a monster, but one of his scenarios was probably one of the funnest things I had because it went so off the rails from my group. My group was known as the teams. It was something Pallotta came up with, was giving the teams the team names, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was right. Because that was in the novels. Nick Pallotta wrote a series of novels. They were for Avon Publishing or Ace Fantasy, I think.
Ace, yes.
Yeah, Ace early on. And they were men's adventures, but they were in the Bureau 13 universe. And his was following a team called Team Tuna Fish.
Correct.
And we had Team Kamikaze because our team kept ruining their RVs that they travel around the country and to fight evil and stuff like that. Cause you're a member of the 13th branch of the Department of Justice. So that right. was like Bureau 13. Well, there's only 10 branches. That's why they're super secret.
The other two are also probably secret.
They probably are. And they're probably other things. One of the adventures you did was there was a company that was buying up all this forest and chasing people out and all this stuff. And it's just very convoluted, good mystery. It was very Scooby-Doo-esque where you're trying to figure out what's really going on. And it turns out it's a unicorn hunt. That mm-hmm. the company wants a unicorn. And they know there's one in this. It's like the last unicorn meets X-Files with an evil corporation. It was fantastic. And of course, my team took it totally off the rails. They were convinced Bigfoot was involved. They were convinced aliens was involved. And it was just enough meat in that story that it could have gone any direction. That's a good Bureau mission is one of those. It could go any way. And they don't know until the last minute when they got to figure it out.
And sometimes your players come up with such good ideas that you say, hey, that's a better idea. That's the way this mission is going to resolve. Yeah.
Who needs a unicorn? It's a cockroach alien. Yes. Yeah.
We both did a cockroach alien.
Yep.
Richard and I.
Another story that we loved. I remember we had played Bureau for years, and then we came across the novels, which mm-hmm. drew me back to it. We'd gotten out of it for a little while, and the novels were so great that we got back into it. So if you get a chance, look for those. Late, great Nick Pallotta. He's another one of those prolific guys that never got enough credit. He wrote 80 some odd novels. I think 60 of them are not in his name because he was a ghostwriter primarily. He wrote a lot of the old Executioner and Deathlands, if you're familiar with those series, which I know a lot of our travelers, we get a few of our truck driver friends to talk about listening to the Deathlands audios. I'm like, a couple of those James Axlers were actually Nick Pallotta or other authors.
He did the Ace novels, he went on to do stuff for TSR.
Yeah. Yeah,
he or did. Wizards. I'm not sure who owned it at that point.
I think it was still TSR because he did the Endless Quests, which I think mm-hmm. Wizards of the Coast ended. So
he got paid. That's all that mattered.
Yeah, and he wrote a couple of the Shadowrun novels too. Mm-hmm. But he introduced a few things like the wizards not being able to use technology and some other things that a lot of people incorporate into their games now. Mm-hmm. And that's even our friend Jim Butcher. Uses that in his Dresden Files books that the wizards affect. And that came from Nick, and he admits it.
Okay. I got to ask you this, Bruce, because, you know, we are Eerie Travels. We have that entire situation. And we talk a lot about things that go bump in the night, so to speak, right? So a lot of these modules and stuff are talking about, you know, Bigfoots and ghosts and stuff like that. What has been your experience with people talking to you about their experiences with some of the monsters and stuff that you have in these universes, but, you know, like Bigfoot and unicorns and Nessie, and we talk, you know, there's all these creatures out there and aliens, especially. I'm assuming you've had people talk to you about their encounters or something on the realism, or did you meet aliens? Is that how you know this? Where has it sort of touched that realm of the preternatural, we like to call it?
Well, first of all these people want to meet these creatures. Okay. I've never run into anybody who had a negative interaction with the supernatural. And I did have one time when I was talking about Bureau 13 with a group of people at Denny's one night, and there was this one guy that just kept edging closer and closer to us. And then at the end of it, we're going to, you know, check out, he comes up to me and says, "Is that stuff you were talking about? Was that real?" And I was so tempted. I was so tempted, you know, to just shine him on. And I said, no, man, it's just for a role-playing game. It's, you know, it's the imagination. We made it up. So he was so disappointed. But
I would believe that. I mean, because that's the thing, is I think there's a part of us that does truly want to believe it's all the things are real. And yeah. So I just wondered how many people, because unlike Dungeons and Dragons, in a way, I know there's LARPing and there's the Society for Creative Anachronism, which I talked to somebody in it the other day and I said the wrong thing, which just sets them off in a direction. But I mean, it's one thing to go, you know, there's a dragon or an ogre or something like that, but it's very different when you're touching on things that people claim to have encountered. And I'm not saying anybody hasn't encountered it. Anybody who listens to this show knows I'm a believer too. But I'm just curious how close that gets or how much interaction you've had with people that talk about their real experiences.
I've mostly had interactions with people who were into Wicca, who talked about, you know, doing rituals and things like that and living their lives according to the pagan beliefs and things like that, and firmly convinced that this is having a major effect, and saying, you know, bad things happened to that person because of what they did, and, you know, making sure that they, you know, keep their herbs pure and doing a number of cleansing type things around their homes and recommending things like that to other people, engaging in mentally cleansing rituals with their friends and family. So that's the sort of thing that I've had the most reaction with. And I ran to a lot of people like that in the SCA. But I don't attract a whole lot of people in that direction because I'm a devout Christian. And so a lot of people think that I'm not going to be interested in that sort of thing, or, you know, I'm going to somehow judge them, which I don't, because I lived through the satanic panic too. And here I am, you know, a good churchgoer, and people are looking at me askance because of this avocation of mine. So, yeah, I understand that sort of thing. So I think we're all our own worst enemy in that regard, that there's, so mostly what I've seen, this kind of thing has been on, as we mentioned, on news groups and on chat things and stuff like that. So most of my interactions has been in the area of trying to create fiction. So I've done research. I've read what other people have said about their own experiences and stuff. And added that into the adventures that I've written. But I haven't, been braced by anybody saying, you know, "Hey, let me tell you about this thing that happened to me just last weekend." No, if I think about it long enough, I might be able to remember a few of those.
To me that you say that you're a devout Christian, because a lot of times people think that you can't have a symmetry between these sort of situations, right? Where you can't be into these role-playing games that have all these fantastical things and still believe in, you know, a Christian, Catholic, you know, kind of God. And I think it's interesting because I feel like that can pollute the actual joy of having an area of belief, fantasy, and, you know, imagination that has nothing to do with a religious aspect, even if there's quote unquote religions in those particular stories, but because it's creating another fantasy, you know, environment where religion exists, but it doesn't negate your religion or your belief system. And, you know, the whole satanic panic thing didn't make you a Satanist. You know, that was all garbage, as we all now know, right? But I think it's very interesting, because a lot of times when I feel that people who have certain beliefs don't necessarily talk about it, because almost the reverse feeling of, oh, you're into this religion, then you can't be into what we're doing, and you obviously are judging us, which is just stupid. So
yes. Yeah, I thought long and hard about whether I wanted to support Halloween because of its roots in paganism and stuff like that. And I finally came to the conclusion saying, this is the one day of the year where everybody is willing to acknowledge the supernatural, even in play, even if it's just, you know, just for fun. He says, you know, what a shame it would be if we didn't rejoice in this giant, you know, expression of unified belief in the supernatural. Because if you don't believe in the supernatural, you don't believe in religion. You know,
it's true.
Someone who's a devout of any religion, their life is full of the supernatural. So I think it's easier to reach out to somebody, you know, in another religion, if you're evangelical, you know, because you believe, you know, in, you know, that different reality that they are, that they're living in, you're willing to listen to it, accept what they're saying, and then try to see if there's a bridge to what it is that you believe in. It's really hard to do that if you're like, you know, super I don't believe in any religion. Everything is, you know, you're born, you die, and you eat ice cream in between. And then you run into these people that believe in that life goes on forever, and that you might have had pre-existence, and people are connected by unseen forces. I don't even know how those people can even begin to start having any kind of a connection to those people. You know, I'm not in that situation. I'm glad that I can, you know, listen with respect to other people with other views.
I love that you said that.
More people could.
Yeah.
I wish more people could. Yeah. It's. So,
go ahead, Mark. But I have another question now.
My next question is simple. You've been, like I said, you and I, we've been doing this a long time. Now you have a podcast as well, and you've been doing it for quite a while. And
yeah, we just released our 771st episode.
Wow.
It's a huge victory to hit those marks. The fact that I'm there doesn't mean that. I mean, I remember we were just like, I can't believe we're still here. I can't believe we haven't pod faded by now, you know. And I started the podcast. It was originally called the Fringeworthy Podcast, and I did it because I was trying to support Richard, you know, and his games. And it seemed to me that he was having a lot of trouble getting out new products, because RPG games is a new product driven market. Everyone goes down to wherever it is that you buy your games. You know, this is before everybody bought everything off the internet, but like your comic shop, your game shop, your hobby store, or whatever that they might be at, your bookstore, and you're looking for the new thing, the thing that they're putting up on the racks in the front. So everybody was always, you know, they always had to have something new. And if you don't have something new, people would forget about you. So I said, how can we talk about the new stuff for these games that Richard is doing, you know, and keep it fresh in their minds, and at the same time give them something useful, you know, about it. So I said, let's do a podcast about Fringeworthy, and that way, instead of spending a year producing a supplement, we can give them new information that they probably haven't considered every week. And so we record once every 2 weeks in a 2-hour block, and then we split in half and do, you know, two episodes of an hour each, you know, usually bridged together. And it's topical. So every time, you know, we always talk about, you know, this topic or that topic. So if you go to our website, you know, which is now called, by the way, Gaming on the Frontier, it's all the same episodes, but we changed the name over the years because originally it was Fringeworthy. Then later on, we said, okay, let's expand it to support Richard's other products like Fringeworthy, Bureau 13, FTL, and all the other ones. So we called it the Tri-Tac Games Podcast. And then later on, after Richard died, we said, okay, well, you know, we're going to probably be doing other things now that, you know, it's our focus isn't just going to be on Richard. And also because in many ways, after 700 episodes, we pretty much said everything we wanted to say about certain games. Okay. So I was like, you know, and we were spreading out. So I said, okay, let's just talk about, you know, what we consider to be the forefront of gaming, where gaming should go, things that are that need some love. You know, so we called it Gaming on the frontier of gaming, the places where it's a little wild and woolly, and maybe you can have a lot more flexibility. We're not a one true wayism podcast in any way. So that's why we changed the name to Gaming on the Frontier. So, but it's still us. I'm still like the original host, plus are my co-hosts, and we do it on Skype. So they're all over the country, and we've had co-hosts rotate in and rotate out, you know, and gone on to form their own game companies, gone on to do other things. It's been great, you know, all these years of doing this. But if you want to know, you know, if you want to know new things about Bureau 13, not necessarily what Tri-Tag Games is doing, if you want that, you need to go to their website, okay? Yeah. Or you can watch Drive-Thru RPG and see what might be showing up there, because they have these things called Tri-Tag Game Spotlights, and they talk about various things. But we continue to do episodes on various things about Fringeworthy, on FTL, on whatever, you know, and along with some of the other things. And so you can go to that website, you know, with 771 episodes, there's probably an episode that might be of interest to you. So you just type in the search bar what you're interested in: ghosts, you know, vampires, time travel, cults, and you'll find some episodes on those things. So, you know, and then you can listen to us and you can say, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And that's perfectly fine, because a friend of mine said that the best way to get through a writer's block is to hand your idea to someone else and say, write this for me. And then they write it and they hand it back to you. And you say, no, this is all wrong. It should be this, it should be this, it should be this. And you're on your way.
Yep.
So I don't mind being the seed, you know, the seed corn for you to write something that's all you, you know. If we've been able to help anybody along those lines, we're very, very happy about that.
Your players will take it another direction on top of that. So
always no adventure has ever survived past initial contact with the players.
Okay, so one thing you have in any game is you have a character that you play. So right. You talk about your son's character. What is your favorite character that you ever played in Bureau 13?
My favorite character in Bureau 13 is a character by the name of Pastor Gill. His name is actually Francis Xavier Gilliam. He was an Irish-American from Philadelphia. He was a boxer. And yes, I know this sounds an awful lot like a certain movie series, okay? But the idea was that he wasn't a very good boxer. He had a lot of strength, but he didn't have the endurance to go the distance, and he was losing a lot. But then one day he goes in to fight, and the guy beats him, all right? And beats him hard, and he's like, this guy is a lot stronger than I remember. And he goes into the locker room afterwards to congratulate him and ask him, you know, hey, have you changed your training regimen? Is there something I could do? And he sees a demon eating this guy because his 7 years were up. He'd made a bargain. And so he basically wasn't getting, you know, the demon was eating him, therefore consuming his soul. And that kind of rocked this character's world. So he's like, well, you know, he says, I got to put a stop to this. So he decides to become a priest. And he goes to seminary and does all that stuff. And then at the end of it, you know, he basically starts doing advanced classes. And he says, hey, when are we going to start learning about things like, you know, fighting demons and doing exorcisms and things like that? And they look at him and they say, well, my fine boyo, this is a Presbyterian seminary, and we don't do that sort of thing. He's like, oh, no, now I'm confused. So he went on to become like a youth minister in the inner city of Philadelphia, and doing his best to fight the supernatural on his own, because he knew it was there. He just, you know, and that's how the Bureau found him. And then they brought him in. And so he's this guy who basically, you know, he has all the priestly type skills that you find in Bureau 13. But he's also like, you know, got boxing as his primary backup. He has like the the silver knuckles, you know, and stuff like that. But he also carries like a big double barrel shot. Actually, he carried the biggest guns in the game because he said, I really hate guns. I don't want to use them. But if I have to use one, I want it to be the biggest gun to send the game that the Bureau issues. So he has this thing called the Foster 577 that fires depleted uranium rounds. It's basically like a Brett, but in a handgun. Okay, you know, and then he has the double barrel. Actually, it was an automatic shotgun called the Atchison Street Sweeper, which is a salt shotgun. He used that too, but only, you know, against supernatural, never against people.
I sometimes think people are way worse than the supernatural. I'm just saying, humans can be worse monsters than any monsters we create. So
absolutely.
That happens a lot in Bureau. That's you're sitting there thinking, oh, okay, we got this. You know, I'm ready with the sunlight gun. I'm ready with the silver and ready with the crucifix and holy water. Oh, it's just a guy who's a jerk and he's wearing a bulletproof vest. So
it's somebody who's saying he's actually doing a scam. He's scamming people. You know, he's saying I'm a exorcist or I'm a ghostbuster, but he's actually just doing stuff. And while he's doing that, sometimes he actually, stirs up some real supernatural. And then we get these rather interesting situations. Yeah.
That's the beauty of Bureau is basically the way the Bureau recruits people. It's not like FBI training, stuff like that. Right. They find people who've had encounters with strange and unusual things and they men in black them. They come up to them and go, hey, you're good in a pinch. We could use you. You may never get a call, but then someday they'll be like, hey, there's something weird and we need a kitchen witch who's really good, you know, to go exorcise Emeril Lagasse's kitchen. So that sort of thing.
Right. That's the Mission Impossible kind of model.
Yeah.
I always did the one where it said, well, you ran into the supernatural instead of hovering in a corner crying and saying, please someone save me. You try to deal with it. That means you're somebody we can use. And therefore we'll hire you for a goodly sum of money and put you through training. And then you can be the hunter instead of the hunted.
Yeah.
And most people, most of the players responded very positively to that.
Yeah.
As we all know, Erica would not be recruited because she would nope out of that entire situation routinely. Yeah. As I say regularly, I will leave it to the other people. But we're getting near the end. Mark, I'm going to let you with your fanboyness do the last question for our lovely friend Bruce here before you take us away.
I mean, we barely touched on everything with Bureau, which and some of the other guys. FTL, we've mentioned it a few times. That's their space exploration game. I think it and Traveler came out very close. And they were
Traveler was the first. Definitely was the first, okay. And the one that TSR came out with.
Yeah, Star Frontiers.
Right. The point, but this was FTL 2448, which 400 years in the future or so. So it was very, even though it was aliens, it was very recognizable technology. It wasn't Star Trek. It was a lot closer to what you saw in Babylon 5.
And Hardwired Hinterland, we just mentioned, that's another crazy, similar to Gamma World, but on a whole other level. I loved it. World War One with mutated rabbits and stuff like that. I don't know how
else. Hinterland is nothing like that, Mark. Check it out again.
That was the version I played. I don't know. That was that was at a Gen Con. I don't remember. It was like Watership Down meets World War One. But then we had the Bureau 13 computer game that my wonderful co-host Erica found for me. I had lost my original copy in many moves. There was a lot with Bureau, and thank you, Bruce, for coming on and talking about all this. So my last question for you then is, if someone were to start a new Bureau 13 game, which edition would you recommend they go with? Because there is the original, then there was the nice bound one, and then there's also the D20 edition that we discussed, the two D20 editions.
Right.
We won't get into that.
Yeah. I had hoped that there would be a Savage World edition of it, but unfortunately that didn't happen. So I would definitely say go with the D20 one because A, it has all of the, you know, the best ideas that, you know, every time we did it, we said, okay, let's not just blindly roll in everything in the past. Let's ask ourselves, what is more fun? how do we make this game more fun? This thing. And so we tried to do that with each of the D20 ones we did. So with D20, I mean, it's a system that everybody understands because it has a lot of commonality. You can use supplements from literally thousands of supplements out there, whether it's supernatural or whatever. There's all kinds of options you can bring in from others, other D20 products. You know, if you want a cyberpunk adventure, there's a D20 cyberpunk. You could bring in some of those adventures. So I'm just saying it's something that we wanted to go that direction because we wanted to provide more resources for people. Because I said this, TriTech has always been not enough resources. So we said this was the best way of going. Really, you know, whatever game system that you like the best, there's no reason why you can't just play Bureau 13 in that system. Okay. And I played Bureau 13 in Hero system. I played in the original rules. I played in Savage Worlds. I played in GURPS. I played in D20 Modern, which is the one I was involved in. So I'm just saying is that there's really no limitation in that regard. But if you're asking for a recommendation, I would recommend the D20 edition. Just because I know I put my stamp of approval on it.
So. I'm happy about that because our team Kamikaze got in that. as one of the yeah. teams.
But I also want
yours got in it.
Yeah, but I also want you guys to if someone starts a new game, please don't think that you are doing this by yourself. Okay. The people that are involved in our podcast are more than willing to help you in any way we can to be successful at playing one of these games. Okay. You can contact us through the various Facebook groups. You can contact us through Podbean that hosts it. You know, half the time we're giving our personal emails out saying just, you know, we'll run demo, adventures for your people. So you can if you're a really new GM, to get an idea about how a Bureau 13 adventure plays. Yeah, I'm just saying is that in the beginning, most of us joined in with like D&D. We joined a group. Okay, they already knew what they were doing, what they were playing, and we felt like we were joining them, and we didn't feel like we were doing it all by ourselves. Okay, yeah. This still exists. It's just especially with the TriTech games, you just need to reach out to people. You know, there's. You know, and some of us are retired now and we have a lot of time on our hands. So we're more than willing to help you out. So don't be shy. Don't feel that, you know, our time is too valuable to spend on a new player or somebody who has a great idea that they, you know, and especially if someone says, hey, you know, can I produce something? Well, you'd have to, you know, if it's actually something related directly to any of these games, you have to talk to TriTax, you know, systems, because they're the only ones that can authorize that sort of thing. If it's for your own personal use, then yes, please go do that. Okay. And if it's for something else that's entirely new, feel free to reach out to all of us who are game designers. We love to help people reach out and reach their potential as game designers. There's not enough of us around, really.
No.
That's very, very true. Well, Bruce, it was wonderful to meet you. I know Mark has fanned over you, but it was absolutely wonderful to meet you. And I suppose now I'm going to actually have to play Bureau 13 because Mark's now going to say, look, you've even talked to a creator. So it'll happen. We'll have to give you an update on that. So thank you so much for being with us this evening. And so where is the best place? You said Facebook groups. We'll include it. Like if you say one place people should go to find you, what is that one place?
Well, if it has to do with Bureau 13, it's probably Bureau 13 Agents Among Us, and that's on Facebook. You can reach me on Facebook anytime.
Wonderful. Okay, Mark, take us away, my friend.
All right. Well, travelers, thank you again so much for joining us on this trip down memory lane for me, but also very enlightening. Bruce, thank you so much for joining us. And we will put all your contact info in the show notes for people who are trying to find you and all that. Thank you so much for your time. Listeners, patrons, thank you for keeping this show on the road and letting us go down these little fun Muncie rabbit trails. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in all the time. send us your favorite role-playing story. Send us some, you know, wild character you made in a game. I love reading those just as much as we love our Bigfoot sightings and UFO encounters and people who've had glitches in the Matrix. And when that happens, you know who you call. You call Bureau 13. And then when you are walking through that hallway and you see that creature coming at you and you can't quite make it out, it's got the head of a squid and the body of a man with maybe furry arms, and you realize, oh my gosh, I've got a were-mollusk. And you go through that Bureau 13 issued ammo kit, and you got to find the closest thing on that chart to figure out what to use. Use the ash picked by a left-handed virgin under the light of a full moon with the silver tip, and that'll get you close. And we'll see you on the other side.
Member Week is here at Lowe's. Don't miss your chance to get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, stain, tools, flooring, and more. Shop our exclusive deals happening in-store and online from May 8th through May 14th. Not a member? Join My Lowe's Pro Rewards for free today and get ready to save more. Lowe's, we help you save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.